You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk iZombie, Season 1, Episode 9, Patriot Brains. Well, as I talk iZombie, hi, my name is Heather. That's what I'm here for. I did get this email before we started recording from Alex, and it made me question about whether or not I was going to be doing this podcast all by myself. Because Alex said, I'm okay with postponing this recording for this episode to never, just FYI. So I don't know. Am I a solo podcaster today, or do I have a partner in crime?
You do have a partner in crime, but I want to state Yay! That I am here under protest. And I do not like this. I do not like this show, and I hate my life and everybody in it, including Heather, for making me talk about this, because I'm not used to talking about my feelings.
Excuse me? Yes, you are. You're very
yes, I am.
About your
but
feelings.
I still don't like the subject. So let's get this over with so I can go and, I don't know, cry in a corner.
Well, you're going to have to talk about this because, good news, since our last podcast, iZombie has been renewed for season 2. Yay!
Yeah.
She's much happier than that, I promise you. If you know anything about our podcast, if you've listened to Alex, I think you have a little hint of why she is not so happy about this particular episode.
Yeah. Guess why? And first two guesses don't count.
It has been renewed for a second season. And just so you know, every single show that Sci-Fi for Chicks has podcasted on for the 2014-2015 season has been renewed for another season. That's Gotham. Yay. Sleepy Hollow. Yay. Orphan Black. Yay. And iZombie. Yay. So you should be listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks because we know what's going on. We are like right there. We are
also,
this window into what's cool and awesome. And you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Very, very true. So you should be listening to us, which means you should go over to iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice and subscribe to us. Sci-Fi for Chicks. And of course, follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks and let us know what you think about other shows coming up that maybe we should talk about in some way, shape, or form so that we can ensure that they are also renewed. Sci-Fi for Chicks at sci-fi4me.com. Hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI.
You're getting better at this. Every recording we do, it's smoother and smoother. And it only took you a year.
Only took me a year, and that's even after a quick little vacation, because I was gone for the last few days, so not too shabby.
Yeah.
We start every iZombie podcast talking about the title cards that they have. And I'm thinking, Alex, that with these title cards, the intern has definitely gone back to doing intern stuff and getting coffee. For me, at least.
Yeah.
These were, again, stellar title cards.
I know, vacation brain is over. Whoever was writing them before is back in business and knowing what they do, because those title cards were on the spot, perfect, hilarious, and I was satisfied with them until the very end. But
I think the weakest one was a sketchy kid, but it did tie into the series,
yeah.
The scene that we went into. We had Plan Z, as we're getting ready for zombie plans of action. Vision Accomplished, which ties in very well with the whole military aspect. Cooler Heads, oh, that one hurts. It's so good. That one hurts. It's just so good.
Yeah.
28 Milliseconds Later, which I thought was a great play on zombiness and the timing, because it was just milliseconds after the end of the last episode. our Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which is the part Alex doesn't want to talk about. So let's go ahead and start with the last of the title cards, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, which does have me start singing. You know, a little bit of 80s glam rock there. But it has us addressing our first thing there, which is Ravi got bit. And he's sitting there notating the progress of his becoming the zombie or not.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Ravi being a potential zombie or not. Yay.
Poor baby. But this played almost exactly the way we thought it would last week. With, you know, they picked up exactly where they left off with him wondering whether or not he's going to change, and I think we got, on that front, we got everything we asked for, because not only Ravi was terrified, and you could tell from the way he looked, from the way his voice wavered, to how he still tried to, in a way, protect Liv from the news, not wanting to add to her plate, which was already extremely full, and how he tried to deal with his, let's call it a problem, or a situation, in a way that, you know, still gathered data. Because he was basically making observations on his own state as if he was observing a subject. So while it was still very emotional, because he was being emotional, because this thing was probably possibly happening to him, but he still managed to, the only phrase that I can think of is keep his head in the game and keep it cool and collected and still, you know, write down and record no change or these are my vitals. And the same way he recorded, you know, rats and when he was checking out and Liv and Blaine and Lowell. So he basically treated himself like one of his samples. Which, you know, props to him, but it broke my heart a little bit.
It was good seeing it because it's like he didn't want to totally admit it. I don't think it was just that he didn't want to put more on Liv's plate, but I think he was still trying to be the scientist. And let's observe this and let's not go into this total freakout mode of, I've been bitten, so I must be becoming a zombie.
Yeah.
He was still gathering data, like, how did you know that you were a zombie? I mean, when you woke right up in that body bag, which I thought was an interesting way for us to get more information. It's kind of nice. This is one thing that they always have on Doctor Who, is they talk about how the companion is us, and the companion asks those questions that the audience would ask of the doctor and as a way to get it. And this was a really nice way for us to get some of that information about, okay, what is it like? And she said that the instant she woke up, she was craving brains. You know, it didn't speak to werewolf. I thought that was a nice thing. Like, she's still tied into the other supernatural thing. It's like, okay, checklist. I don't want blood, so no vampire. I don't feel craving brains. Isn't a werewolf thing, so it goes to the zombie thing. He was still trying to gather that information, but we've learned some things now that, you know, it happens almost instantaneously, you know, as soon as you're awoken from that. And we found out too, because I had that kind of question. We go from her waking up in the body bag to 5 or 6 months later, and she's the ME. Well, she had this instant craving and she refused medical help, so these people weren't around her. And then she happens to see this brain and she starts talking about it from another victim. So that at least quelled her desires before she went all full on zombie mode. So it's like, okay, so we have this process where she's figured it out. She's actually found a way to help herself. And now how she got into her life, her new life. And that was something I think I even talked about in one of the previous podcasts, was, are we going to find out anything from that missing time of how she went from Pretty in Pink to, you know, this alabaster zombie kind of thing. So it was a nice little insight, while it also got Ravi information as well that helped his line when he's sniffing the brain and he just, you know, winces. Yeah. It's just, it was nice because it's like you could tell that was, he was instantly thinking, okay, if Liv wanted brains right away and the smell of this is disgusting me, and she was even able to eat, you know, that rotted brain, you know, that, okay, good news, woohoo, it doesn't go cross species, so I'm not going to catch it. And something that we've talked about, too, in other episodes was this has advanced their relationship, too, when she scolds him. You should have told me, I've got your six.
Yeah.
I'm, which totally relates to the kind of brain she's on, because I've got your six is a very military way to say I've got your back. But it also solidified their relationship more. And I really did like seeing that as well, that this instance has now brought them together.
We've talked about it a lot over past 8 weeks. And Ravi and Liv's relationship grows and it adds layers to itself and to them separately. So they're pretty much perfect right now. And everything just makes it even better and more delicious talk about appetite. I want more of those interactions. And yeah. Hey, one more fact about the zombie virus. It doesn't transfer between species. So yay, no black plague anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. And we know that means then that the Utopium, mixed maybe with the Max Rager, but even if it's just the Utopium, is your source there. It's not because, it's not like a human is going to have the Utopium get a zombie and make a dog a zombie.
Yeah.
But it's also not the reverse. If the dog eats something that has Utopium in it, they're not going to suddenly make their master a zombie. And I don't like the idea of a zombie dog, so I do not like that I just brought that whole scenario up. So we're going to move on from that, but that is something interesting. And I like that when he's in the middle of thinking that he might be a zombie, he's actually asking about her. He can tell she's upset. Are you okay? Asking rhetorically.
Yeah.
And it gets them questioning things. I love the moment when he questions, wait, if you've just eaten Jerome's brain, if you've seen this, and Jerome's brain ended up at Lowell's place because of Blaine, how did his bones end up at that psycho house from a few episodes ago? And that something must be rotten in the state of Denmark, aka the Seattle PD. We've opened that door now of knowing that there's something at the Seattle PD that's not quite right.
We know what's not quite right, you and I.
Exactly.
But to see them actually getting closer,
mm-hmm,
is amazing, because iZombie managed to do something not many TV shows actually handle all that well, is that they weaved this long-term storyline over the course of an entire season. But even though the majority of the episodes don't connect to that huge story arc that we are witnessing, there are little breadcrumbs here and there that do, well, nothing for viewers because we already have those information, but they push the characters a little forward to where the writers want them to be and where they want the characters to be. It's clearly huge explosion of everything, because they're going to reach the right conclusions and they're going to reach those conclusions in episode 13, and everything's going to, well, yeah, explode, and it's going to be awesome.
I love seeing that they're not just totally in the dark, that the the opening, they're seeing what's going on there. The stuff that we've been privy to when we saw the lieutenant, he's now a zombie and now he's with Blaine and Blaine's got him under his thumb and where can I go and what can I do? And I'm kind of stuck in the situation. So we know the lieutenant is covering up because he feels he has no option, no out.
Yeah.
But now that Liv and Ravi have this question in their head, it opens up the door to Clive and Major both having yet more of a place in this whole story. Because at some point, one or both of them are going to have to be more involved in that particular storyline. I mean, Liv, when she puts the pieces together, she gets that Major was right, that Jerome was being, you know, disappeared. It wasn't this cult type thing, that it yeah. was something else. And, you know, seeing that he actually is a part of this whole thing, maybe that'll open up more. Or maybe now since they know it's in the police department, maybe that there's some way that Clive is going to be into the whole story more. And yet they're still thinking of their friends, because I like that she is worried about Major and Ravi's worried about Major, that Ravi coming up to try and entice Major out of his room with the gaming and doing the whole quest thing. It is my quest. You know, it was a nice moment. This is something that we've talked about in Orphan Black, that it's nice seeing that it's not just all about here's the plot of the main plot of the story, that we're doing this character side things as well that are showing that life is continuing in some weird, awkward shape. And Ravi is such a great vehicle for that because he does really care. He's not just this cold scientist or this weird Emmy doctor. Sometimes you get Emmys on shows that are just these total, well, I think in the old days that were like super quirky, whatever. Nobody is friends with them or nobody understands them until several seasons into it and suddenly it's revealed. Da, 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 da. This seems like a guy I'd go out and hang out with and have a beer with and have a laugh with and flirt with and games with and, you know, whatever with. I love seeing him developing and interacting with these other characters.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, it doesn't hurt that he has an accent and looks the way he looks, you know.
It doesn't hurt at all.
I'm saying it's a CW show, so you have certain expectations as far as the looks department. And the casting director did not fail. So, yay. I'm just saying.
Ravi also is integral to her getting out of the Jerome brain a little bit and getting us into the crime with Clive by getting her out there. Hey, we've got another body. She was very happy that there was another body.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe, yeah, that was an interesting way, too, for her to... They just did the quick cut, too, going from her still being very Jerome-y to...
Hey, but you gotta admit that out of all the excuses that she might have given to Lowell at that point, I have to go because there is a dead body and I have a job, ranks pretty high. So, you know, it's a good timing, that's for sure.
It was definitely good timing. It gave her a chance, too, to catch up with Ravi and, you know, how's Major doing? Well, you know, at least slight silver lining. He's not thinking zombie. He's thinking other things. So they still have their personal stuff. She gets to have another brain so that she can move on and start doing her crime fighting zombiness with Clive trying to figure out who killed this former soldier, which terrible thing to do. This guy was a vet, had PTSD. I'm not happy at all. And that poor kid.
Yeah.
This played into a very Major thing as well, because this was like a big brother, little brother outing thing, you know, when, you know, helping underprivileged kids. And to see that kid, oh my gosh, when Liv and Clive were talking to the kid who our soldier, Sean, had been the big brother to, that was heartbreaking. And when they jump to the part where they're questioning him, I'm like, do not make it about this kid. Do not, that will break my heart if this kid had anything to do with this man's murder. It really would have.
Yeah. But I think they knew better than that. And before we delve into the case, I want to talk a little bit about the little exchange at the very beginning when Liv arrives to the crime scene. And Clive's first question is whether or not she's okay. Because we know she wasn't okay, but she didn't even look okay. Like, the mopey, somebody shot my dog look that she was sporting at the very beginning of the crime scene. I could understand why Clive felt the need to check in and make sure that she's okay, right? Plus, you know, it added to that whole, yeah, you say we're not friends and just partners and solving crimes, but we both know you're lying. Clive is so friends with Liv. I'm just saying, you know, this is my own personal opinion, but we both know I'm right. Because I'm always right. And at some point, when Clive learns that Liv is a zombie and zombies are actually a thing, he's going to be torn between, oh my god, zombies are a thing, and oh my god, my friend lied to me. Which is going to be such a typical and predictable conflict, inner conflict. Everybody does it nowadays, but it's still going to be worth watching. And I am looking forward to seeing how Clive deals with that.
And it's interesting, like you brought up, that he does see she's down. It's not just about she's the Emmy and she's a psychic, supposedly.
Yeah.
There is that relationship there. And I think that does help and it does play into it. And it's going to really show that these guys are becoming partners. And it shows her humanity that all these other people are finding their connection. So it's something that hasn't been taken from her, is her humanity, just because she's a zombie.
Yeah.
And she even deals with it really well. I love when they were asking the little girl about, you know, what her mom's alibi for whether or not she's the one that killed her ex-husband. I love the little girl going, "You're freaky looking. Why are you so white?" Because it's something that, you know, kids can say the things and get away with all these things.
Yeah.
But you know, it's something that there's people out there too that have said that. I'm sure there's even zombies that are like, why wouldn't you do the spray tan and the hair dye and the whatever? And other people going, why are you so white? Even if you don't mean it maliciously, you notice the difference. So the fact that the kid comes up with it and she's just like, I work in a basement. I don't see much sun. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't bother at all. It doesn't throw her off her game at all. But even Clive is kind of like, that's my friend there. Don't be talking about her, kid.
Yeah, that for sure. I like where they are taking Clive. And once again, I liked seeing him be competent. Because he made it, you know. Believable. And I actually cared about the case this week. That's a little off topic, but still on topic. Because we usually ignore the crime itself, because it's just a means to an end. But this week, I actually cared about who killed the guy and what was happening with him. And there was a new experience to me with iZombie. But it was good.
They added enough little things in there. I liked the intercutting between the ex-wife and her new husband when they were being interrogated. I like that she saw these visions of the victim, Everett, being all upset and, you know, what was happening with that couple and the wife. I did like that. And I thought it was interesting how did you notice that Clive and Liv didn't instantly fall into who did it or who didn't? I mean, like, neither one of them really thought that that kid did it. Neither one of them were instantly going after the wife, even though she talked about seeing the knife in the vision.
Yeah.
She actually said he was going crazy and she had the knife. It was just like, it's fact. This is what happened. Not, he was being bad and she was protecting herself, or mm-hmm. she was being psycho and going after him. It was really just much more, this is what happened. I am glad that Clive is not relying on her for everything, and that he's the one that figured out the connection and found out about the diary, which, even though it didn't give them a lot of information, it did play into something that, of course, we'll talk about at the end and what's mm-hmm. coming up for the rest of it. But when they find that all of his journal said in there was one is less than many, which is a sniper mantra, and how she just says these things, it's makes me wonder if Clive's going to start kicking in and going, she really knows a lot about a lot. Is she just a trivia buff? How does she know the sniper mantra? How does she know about this art? How does she, you know,
yeah.
I wonder if he's going to start putting any clues together that she suddenly has this great insight into exactly what their victim was. Not just who they were, but what they were. And I think that might be an interesting play if he clicks in on this, because we've talked about how he is finding things on his own. He is doing things on his own. Even the way he solved the crime had nothing whatsoever to do with Liv.
Mm. Yeah.
I love that. I thought that was a fascinating thing. It just, it helped because I found the casing, but the guy would have to be 15 feet tall, and it gets him thinking, and he solves the whole crime on his own. I love it.
Yeah, but the problem with Clive is basically the same problem that Major has. He might be able to see all the clues, as in, you know, actually question them and notice what's off and how Liv knows everything, and it's not really psychic thing. But the problem with that is that, well, it's going to be very difficult for him to draw the right conclusion, because he has no idea the solution is an actual option. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he might be able to see the clues, but they're not going to spell zombie for him, because zombie is not an option on the entire list of what it might be. So I don't think that Clive is going to arrive at a conclusion that Liv's a zombie. He might arrive at the conclusion that she's not a psychic, or that, you know, something's wrong. But I don't think, if zombie isn't on the plate, and he doesn't know he can actually arrive at a conclusion that she's a zombie, and for it to make sense, and for him not to be insane, I don't think he will be able to solve it without somebody else telling him, yep, zombies are actually a thing now. Get over it.
I don't know, because I can kind of see even that scene way back in the first episode when he walks in on Liv and Ravi watching the zombie films, and the way he was talking about it. The way Malcolm is playing this character, even how at the end when he's talking about, oh, we have a search warrant, by the way. He's got this methodicalness about him, but I think Liv is opening up his eyes to other options. I can almost see a thing where maybe there's a zombie movie playing, or somebody is joking about something, and between what he's heard from Ravi and Liv saying to each other, and Major spouting off, and what his lieutenant's going to do, I can see him putting pieces together and maybe going, this can't be, but how do I ignore when everything does seem to point this?
This
I see him
be,
like,
but it is.
trying to push it away, mm-hmm. but I can see him actually making that conclusion and just go, it can't be, but how do I ignore the evidence? So that's kind of how I see him maybe coming to it.
Well, I'm pretty sure that he's going to know by the end of the season, either him or Major. And my money's on Clive, that he's going to find out about the zombies. Mostly because I refuse to think that they will pull Merlin on us and have Clive not know for 5 years. Until the very end when he dies. Do I sound like I'm bitter about Merlin?
No.
But anyway, I have, you know, hope in Rob Thomas one way or another that he'll do what's right and have Clive know. So yes, I'm counting on it to be this season, and I hope they don't disappoint me.
With things that happen later in this episode, let's not bring up Merlin and horrible dying. We're going to stay with Clive a little bit, but move into Major. I like that we have had Major crossing into Clive's circle in multiple episodes. So again, we're getting characters that are interacting and not just because Liv is there.
Yeah.
So they're Liv's circle of people, but it's not just because, you know, like when you go to a party and you have friends that talk, but those two friends never do anything unless you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, I have friends like that too, where it's like, yeah. They'll never invite me out if you're not there too, because they're your friend and I'm your friend and we need you. It's starting to be where you don't need that with the characters on iZombie, that they're connecting and interacting with each other. And we see that Major is going over the edge, but we know, and Ravi and Liv kind of now know too, that he's not really going over the edge. He's the one that doesn't get it and doesn't connect it as to what it is. I mean, he's so close. He is so close to making the connection. He has got all the clues. And he might be the one, I think, that could help Clive come up with, you know, start connecting the dots, that maybe they'll in a way be this partnership, even though at the end when he does call Clive, Clive is questioning his own sanity. Well, not his sanity, but Major's sanity. I first find it interesting that Major called Clive first and not 911. I mean, if you kill an intruder in your own home, I think I'd be pretty confident calling the general police. But I think we are specifically trying to connect Major and Clive now.
Yeah. And hey, they still managed to make it believable, because they had Major and Clive meet like all those episodes ago, and Major went back in to check with Clive and tell him where the investigation is not, and that's on finding Jerome and everybody. So I totally bought that, well, Major has this relationship with this cop who works homicide, right? And hey, he just killed a guy, and even though it was totally self-defense, let's go with the guy you know will be more inclined to take your side.
Yeah, he thinks there's a connection because Clive and Liv work together and he and Liv were friends, so maybe he'll take it a little bit more seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
So I wasn't not only willing to buy it, but I actually, you know, bought it. That would be Major's first thought, to call the guy he knows and not some, you know, nameless, faceless 911 operator. Right? So I bought it, and then, you know, this whole I killed a guy and Clive goes upstairs and, well, surprise, surprise, there is no body, there is no blood. And when you look at it from Clive's perspective, it really did not look well for Major. Because, well, there were signs of struggle, sure, but at the same time, you know, there was nobody.
I kind of have to say, though, I mean, just how Liv found that one shell casing, which, by the way, a quick throwback, loved her in the paintball. Loved her kicking butt and winning the award. She deserved that award.
Yeah.
And those things hurt. They really hurt. But just like she found the shell casing, I thought there was something, and I think it's something that's going to play in the back of Clive's head. He found the shell casing, so he knows that a shot
Has
was
been
fired
fired,
in
yeah.
there. But if Major had fired it because he's off his meds or he's on something, there would be a bullet hole
Somewhere,
somewhere
yeah.
in that room. I mean, there's four walls, a ceiling, and a floor, and the bullet would have to go somewhere. So I think that's going to play in the back of his head. I think that Clive is going to be the one to help stabilize Major later on. Not yet, because Clive, we even saw that at the beginning with Liv, the whole beginning of the series, how Clive is thinking Liv is woo, you guys are a little nuts. And now once he kind of settles into a situation, he is there to help. Major is ready to go off the rails because nobody believes him, and he can't open his eyes to what it is. He is so close, like we said, with trying to figure out that there's something about the brain that people are going on. He's just doing it very recklessly, which I think is part because he has lost so much and he's cared so much. We see him, doing those gun videos on t online, but Ravi at that moment is still able to pull him back in, and pull him back to regular life. Then we see him, getting all crazed again and throwing himself in harm's way. Oh my gosh, when he was at the gym and started talking to that personal trainer and trying to get the trainer to say, I'm like, you are just going a little too close to the mark. And that guy, okay, was it just me? Just like that little girl said, you look freaky. You're so white. Why are you so white? That personal trainer looked like he had on a hairpiece and had spray tanned within an inch of his life.
I
So at first I thought he was a zombie.
He looked like Ken or on steroids. The hair, the skin, honestly, Ken doll on steroids. And I was like, you're so fake, you gotta be a zombie.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. Oh, and did you notice the name of the gym? Deadlift, which
Yeah,
makes sense for a gym, but I'm like, oh, it's just like
the puns just keep on coming.
the Mutt
And
Bowl Surfer and all this. I love you. I
come
love
on,
you.
and it fit with Meet Cute so well. I was willing to bet that's yet another venue where Blaine is getting his muscles. Quite literally, the guys he uses to deliver stuff and intimidate people. So I don't
I
know.
have
I'm
to tell you,
yeah.
this makes me want to move to Seattle. And I love Seattle already, but man, if Seattle were really this punny, I would feel so at home. That personal trainer, though, opening his mouth to that other guy, and then of course we have Julian DuPont, the Candyman, overhearing. I'm just like, oh, Major, Major, Major. I feel so apprehensive. And when he got ambushed, I was so scared. He goes and turns on the light, and the light doesn't come on. I'm like, oh no, please. Every episode, they've done something. What, like for the last 3 or 4 episodes, where we're like, no, not Major. Don't take Major from us.
No, come on.
It's not fair.
It's like they think it's funny. Which, spoiler alert, no, it's not. It's really not funny, but it does keep you at the edge of the seat.
Having his hand there and that big, mallet that ready to just, oh, I'm getting visions of misery, and I'm so glad that Major is not a dumb bunny. He's not just pretty. Not just like, don't speak. Don't speak. He figured things out, and he's trying to push this. That's why I think there's a really good chance that he and Clive eventually are going to get together and figure something out and really become part of the Scooby Gang as well. But I felt so much for Major in this whole thing because the writers are just sending him down this rabbit hole where he's just thinking he's totally nuts. And I feel so bad.
But hey, it's going to get better. We know it because it has to. And it's not going to end with Major dying or being turned into a zombie. Though right now, the odds of him becoming a zombie actually got better. And I don't like to think about it, but I'm just going to end here and, you know, try not to cry.
Poor Major. I feel so bad for him. And they did a nice close-up, by the way, and I have no idea because I forgot to look it up beforehand. I have a book that he had on his bookcase, Uncle Vanya by Chekhov. So I'm going to have to look into that and see, because it was just a little too deliberate there.
If it's,
I have a feeling.
If it means something.
Yeah. It means something. So I'm putting that out there right now. Because I was on vacation, so I'm trying to catch up very quickly. But Uncle Vanya means something. Something. I'm not sure what, but it means something.
It doesn't have to be a metaphor. It might just mean that there's a blood evidence somewhere on it, or something. I don't know.
There's going to be something. There's going to be something, just like the way it means something that Blaine was a Nirvana fan. Well, he still is a Nirvana fan. Once a fan, I think you're always a fan.
Yeah. But iZombie writers have a good track record with payoffs. So if they made sure to feature the book, we'll probably learn what it means by the end of the season. So hopefully even next episode. You know, hope always dies last.
I think we'll find out, just like we're finding out more with Blaine, that we've had an absence of actual story of him for several episodes. I liked and also didn't like, because it scares me where it's going, but I liked seeing more of Blaine's story and seeing, I actually felt for him when the doofus henchman, Candyman, is suddenly like the smart henchman, Julian. He is like the brains, pardon the pun there, of the henchman, because that other guy, when Blaine is talking about when he first heard that Kurt Cobain was dead and how that hit him, you know, and the girl telling him, and then you banged her. And it was just like, oh gosh, I'm working with idiots. I felt for Blaine. It's like he's working with this.
Heather, it's not that he works with idiots. I'm pretty sure he can handle idiots, but he works with heathens.
That he created. Because he's the one that scratched this guy that did it. Because I love that when it's like fecal matter. That's like poo, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it's like poo. I felt so for Blaine. I'm like, no, stop that. I don't want to feel for you. You're evil and bad, and I don't like what you're doing.
And he is evil and bad, and we don't like him, Heather. Repeat after me. We don't like him.
We don't like him.
Good girl.
We don't like him. This is even more don't like than Castor Clone don't like. But I have to admit, that scene was great. He had some really great things. It was actually cool, too, to see later on we see him in the car, because everything's coming up Blaine.
Yeah.
He thinks when he's having this meeting with Lawrence Kaiser, this bigwig business guy. So he thinks he's on the uprise. Well, this is going to be great. And to see him put in his place by Kaiser of like, yeah, I'm tired of the runaways. I'm tired of the junkies. I want good brain. And this guy to actually lay before you what kind of brain he wanted. Exactly which brain. Not even what kind. Which brain he wanted.
Yeah, which
I don't like the fact that he's going after a moonwalker. That is just wrong. Leave our moonwalking astronauts alone. But it was kind of interesting to first see Blaine be put in his place, but then scary when you saw that he sees a new world opening for him of potential victims, that it doesn't have to just be runaways. And I'm like, oh no, I'm scared.
But it's not that he saw potential victims. He saw exactly the thing that the guy laid out in front of him. New revenue stream. New potential, you know, that's custom made many for powerful and rich zombies, you know. And the moment it clicked in Blaine's brain, you could tell that even though he didn't like being put in his place, he bought in to that idea. And I don't know if he's going to manage to get the astronaut brain.
No,
or not.
He's not.
Probably.
He's not. He's not. He's not. He's not.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, then. But seeing him explore it? I mean, if this show was called Blaine, I would probably be looking forward to it. No, I'm lying, because if the show was called Blaine, I wouldn't even watch it, because that's a terrible name.
I Blaine,
yeah.
The thing I saw was him actually thinking about his business. Instead of keep making more zombies so that you have more demand, and then you have to go find supply, maybe he's going to go for less zombies and those that can finance him into the manner in which he's become accustomed.
Yeah.
Let's stop with the guys that go fecal matter. It's like poo, right? Let's stop making those guys zombies.
Mm.
And let's make guys that are like these billionaires that don't want to get their hands dirty.
But here's a problem that Blaine might not anticipate. Even though he's an extremely intelligent villain, but I don't think this is something he can anticipate the same way he didn't anticipate being put in his place. When you make powerful people zombies, when you make rich people into zombies, you have to anticipate that, well, they will turn on you, because there is a reason why they are rich. There is a reason why they are powerful. And you might be putting them in a completely new situation where, you know, they are basically fish out of water. But they did not get to a point where they are rich and powerful by being, forgive my language, somebody's bitch. So the fact that Blaine did not anticipate that this powerful guy is going to go against what Blaine has planned and what Blaine offers is kind of, you know, amateur move, basically. And that's why he was a drug dealer at the very beginning of the show, and not a power player. Because anybody who has power and worked for that power and isn't just powerful because he turns people into zombies and then, you know, supplies them with food. I feel like at some point it should have occurred to him that not everybody's going to take what he gives. I keep wondering why all those powerful people do not find their own way that is not Blaine. Because they have the money.
Well, I think part of it is, well, first off, how do you tell people, yeah, I need you to go do this because I need brains because I'm a zombie. So I think it's a complacency that Blaine's done this and Blaine already knows, so I don't have to go out and explore. I don't have to do all this extra work. I don't have to get my hands dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do more. And, you know, it's like they feel like they almost have something over him, or that just like the lieutenant says, I didn't have a choice. Or we even had Lowell saying, I didn't have a choice,
yeah,
kind of thing. What other choice did I have? Not realizing that there is another choice. And I don't know, the rich guys might also just be like, why go out and find somebody else? I already have you. How much is it going to take? Because the money doesn't matter to me. How much is it going to take to get what I want and how I want it?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what... But I agree. I don't think he is... I think he's still thinking like the drug dealer and what he saw the more kingpins doing and not putting all the blocks into place. I think we do have some definite openings for Blaine to have his downfall. He just didn't see him because everything's coming up Blaine.
And that might be a good idea to explore in season 2, now that we know they have season 2. Because nothing will make it more interesting than somebody who's more powerful than Blaine. Plus, you know...
It's just kind of scary.
It is. It kind of is. It's exciting.
What's not so exciting is I don't want to get into this last part, but I do.
No.
This is the part of the podcast that I almost would prefer to do as a solo podcast, because we can't avoid this any longer.
Yes, we can.
We've talked around everybody else. And we have, let's start with the beginning.
No.
Where we have that 28 milliseconds later, where I was wrong. Liv actually did run into Blaine. She knows that Blaine is the one that is supplying the brains. And what I thought was interesting was she tried to hide. She's trying to go past. She sees Julian. She gets the flashes. Did you see? There were 8 coolers in the back of that car.
Yeah.
Blaine's already delivering one. So even if Lowell is his first stop, or somebody else in the Waterfall Plaza building there is his first stop, and that's their first delivery, that's still 9 zombie clients that he's delivering to.
Yeah.
Minimum. And then when you see them later with all the coolers, it gets you thinking, oh my gosh, how many? I think one place he didn't think was how many creations. I mean, come on, he played Dr. Frankenstein. Think about your creations here.
Yeah.
He's created, I think, so many that I think that's going to be part of his downfall. But she goes by and she sees this, and she is just so freaked out, which I totally understand. And that scene when she's confronting Lowell about, you know, what he is and what he's been eating. You know, I had a bite of your eggs and brains before I left. And, you know, you didn't, him saying, I didn't have a choice. There's always a choice. And realizing what it was, I felt bad for him, but I also totally understood where Liv was coming in. She's finally opened up herself. She's finally has somebody that she can really be totally open with about everything she is.
Mm.
And more, and get him shirtless and almost pantsless. Thank you. And then she discovers this. I was on her side for at least that scene. Actually, for each of the scenes, but definitely in that scene when she's, you know, you told me you got him from funeral homes. Well, you know, they weren't all young street kids. They didn't all die horrible deaths. They didn't all. I thought it was an interesting scene when she confronted him that first time.
Yeah, but every time, it's like this, I agree with you, but every time she confronts Lowell and earlier Blaine about how they get their brains, it's like I flash to early days of Liv and early episodes, where I think Blaine was the one who pointed out, not everybody has a cushy job with a, you know, constant supply of food, and while she already met 2 zombies, right? Blaine and then Lowell. At no point in time did she offer to supply either one of them.
And at no point in time, well, actually she did with Blaine.
Yeah, but so that didn't turn out so well. But with Lowell, come on, at no point in time did she...
Well, Lowell's an adult zombie, too. He could have also asked, hey, I'm not liking where I'm getting my brains from. Maybe we could share brains. Maybe we could have a nice little meal for 2, you know. You take the front, the left half, I'll take the right half. And he didn't ask, so... And she thought he had a good place to get it from that was, you know...
Well, yeah, but still, you know, at no point in time did she actually offers a... If she wonders where they are getting their brains, and at no point in time does it occur to her that I could offer. Because let's face it, Lowell is a guy. At what point in time did you meet a guy who actually took help from his lady friend with no problem?
Yeah, but if my zombie boyfriend told me that he had a good place to get it, it was from a funeral home, and that seemed kosher because then the people died some other way. They weren't murdered for their brains. They died some other way. Just like her body, her brains die some other way. She doesn't kill them. Well, you know, he's got his own grocery store he goes to. I've got mine, and they're both okay because Nobody mishandled or treated. I can see it. I mean, I think it could have helped her in her whole crime fighting thing. Hey, like I said, let's share this brain. Maybe you'll get visions and I'll get visions. Together we can really help Clive, and the three of us can just become a happy little thing.
And these
But
are the
I mean,
conversations that we are actually having. And how surreal is
yeah,
that?
exactly. I'm on Liv's side, you're on Lowell's side. That's a shocker that you're on Lowell's side. I can totally understand, though. I mean, if you just eaten the brains of this kid that your ex-fiance was so concerned about, and that you met, and he was a nice guy. I mean, it's like, yeah, I eat chicken, but if I go across the street to my neighbors who have chickens, and the next day they bring me chicken, I might go, but I just saw that chicken, and it was a cute chicken. I don't know if I want to eat this chicken. I'm gonna eat the chicken from the store that has no face to it. I could put a face to that chicken. She can put a face to that brain, so maybe that's the, I can see her being shocked for that. And him pulling out, which I thought was sweet, but I also thought was very planted, that it's like, well, for a start, I'm in love with you. And it doesn't matter to her in that moment, because in that moment, I've just eaten the brains of a person that I knew.
But either way, no matter
Well, that's
whose
going to
side
be
we're
bad.
on, it did push Lowell to one of the most heartbreaking scenes. Like,
Oh,
this whole episode
yeah.
was heartbreaking, and my poor little black heart suffered a lot. But when he comes back to live with
Well,
the
before
come
the
on.
setup for that scene that I love, because we have Liv on the Patriot brain, and it starts her, she's military, and she's polishing her boots. Very military, very proper, which she's been. We even saw in the interrogation when the wife came in, she stood at attention. And it took her a while to sit down. So she's in this very military frame of mind now, because she's got Jerome's brains out of her. And then he comes to the door. That was a great juxtaposition between the brain she was on and what's about to happen to him. Okay, go ahead. Continue on with the scene.
Well,
I just like that beginning juxtaposition.
it was nice, but just seeing this entire scene, I don't even have words, because it was so heartbreaking and so emotional on both of their parts, even though she was on this military brain. I think seeing Lowell like that hit, it was like a
Oh, yeah.
punch to the gut.
Well, military doesn't mean unfeeling. It's not like that sociopath from, several episodes
from the
ago.
beginning.
But yeah. That when he starts saying, "We eat people," and she's like, "I know," and he goes, "No, we eat people." And you can see that it is so finally sunk into him what he is. Before it was just this thing. But
Because
now it's totally internalized. And not just because he ate the brain.
this scene just took what you said earlier about chickens and neighbors having chickens, and just took it and ran with it, because that's exactly what it was. As long as Lowell's food and brains were delivered to him as, well, pretty much a chicken breast, just make it whatever you want. He didn't have to think about them as people, no matter how many visions he got. Because, just like he said, he wasn't like Liv. He wasn't looking for triggers. He wasn't investigating what happened to those brains. So I can buy that not all visions he got were traumatic experiences. Because if you
Or
don't have
you
a
just go,
trigger,
whatever.
we have this with Liv. She gets a trigger and then gets a vision. But once he went to and saw the funeral of the guy and witnessed everything that the guy was before he died, that chicken suddenly got a face and a name
Yeah.
and family. And I think that's, if he could, that was the moment when Lowell would become vegetarian, basically. if he could, yeah. Right? If it didn't mean his slow decay into full-on zombie mode. Because...
Yeah, I don't think there's tofu brain.
Yeah, unfortunately. Which we wish there was. Because, you know, like True Blood, you know, it might not taste the same, but it has the same properties as real blood. So why not switch? That would be
or on Being Human, where he would go to the blood bank. This is blood that's been donated.
Yeah.
It's not as good as straight from the source, but it gets your body. Yeah, there's not really a substitute. Can I just have part of your brain? You don't really need this one little part, right? The rest of it you can keep.
People use 30% of their brains, right?
Yeah,
so who needs the rest?
Yeah, well, Lowell had his Soylent Green moment.
Yeah.
It's people. It was really heartbreaking. He recovered quite nicely, though, as soon as she kissed him and then they fall into bed.
Well, he might be emotional and perfect and well-built, but
he's still a guy. He's still a guy.
I know we might be insulting men in general with this attitude, but my experience has been, well, he's a guy.
Come on, I think it's one of those things even guys agree. At some point, it's like, I'm pouting over feelings, and here's a woman who's kissing me, and we could have sex. Sex, you know, don't even finish that.
Yeah, we will go back to the feelings after we've done this. But
yeah,
there's
time for feelings. Give it like 5 minutes, and we'll have feelings. Something else that I did like, still staying in Liv and Lowell, but to bring in Ravi. Ooh, little
Menachem. Well, that's a threesome I would like to see.
When Liv is complaining about Lowell and what it is, and Ravi opens her eyes, I think. And I think that's part of her change. His change was seeing that funeral,
yeah,
and seeing this English teacher and the wife and the family and how much that hit him. I think Ravi helped her change in saying, you know, it's like, well, what a luxury it is not to have to know what it's like to not have an easy access to brains. And I think that was the first moment that she realized, I think it was easy to say, he's got a funeral home that he can get brains from. But just like we learned because of Ravi, that she wanted brains instantly and brains happened to be there when she woke up because of this big accident. I don't think she thought about that when Lowell changed. Was there something right then and there that could at least satiate his appetite enough until he could figure out a plan? How do you go from becoming a zombie to having this plan with this funeral director?
Yeah.
It's like now suddenly it doesn't make sense. And Ravi is your voice of reason there. He actually stuck up for Lowell, even though he's become good friends with and roommates with Major. You know, he's found a good way not to be in the middle and to just help Liv understand Lowell a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually a really nice moment that I think helped Liv and Lowell actually become closer together, with Liv then deciding that this virus that is Blaine must die.
Yeah. And with that, let's end our podcast and never come back to this again.
So something that I thought was interesting was in that journal, we had that sniper mantra of one is less than many. And you and I have had talks about how much does the brain take over when you eat that brain? How much of you is still there? And how much is this other brain? And how long does it take you to overcome the effects of the brain to get back to being you? So they come up with this plan that they're going to take Blaine down. And Lowell's inviting him over to his house for a little barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to do the sniper thing. Perfect timing. She has sniper brains. And she needs to take someone out pretty quietly. And they're having their little brain barbecue that just, I suddenly do not want anything bacon wrapped after that particular vision. That moment when he has that vision and sees Blaine actually doing the killing, that's where I felt so much for Lowell, because he has just had so much piled on him in this episode with really realizing where his food has been coming from. And also realizing what his supplier was willing to do.
Mm.
Not just kill a chicken, but kill a young boy for this. And that resolve, when he's like, he gets the thing and she says, I can't do it. She just can't. She can't become a murderer, which we see in so many things. I can't become a killer. I can't kill him because then I become like him.
Yeah.
Or I can't kill her because then I'll become like her, kind of a thing. That moment when he does that little heart tap and says, I love you, and then turns around, I'm like, oh, this is not going to end well. Because he didn't have a plan for that fork, really. And we've already seen, yeah, he ain't gonna die. Because Julian got shot 3 times in the chest. Headshot, people. Headshot. Learned nothing from Walking Dead. Headshot. And then we end with a gun and a gunshot and a squee.
Yeah. And I refuse to talk about it because it broke my heart. And I'm not ready to discuss this. So ask me again next week.
Okay, I'll ask you again next week when we have the episode Mr. Berserk, which the synopsis is Liv and Clive investigate the murder of a journalist. By the way, this is the journalist that Major had been talking to in a few episodes back when we said the whole Rebecca Hinton thing. She's got a name, so she's going to play back into this. Well, she is. She's our next victim. She was working on a story linking psychotic episodes in a small number of consumers to the energy drink Max Rager. Liv goes straight to the top at Max Rager HQ and questions the man in charge, Vaughn Duclark.
The names. They are not stopping with the names.
Here is the plus about that. It is going to be played by guest star Steven Weber. Love him. Meanwhile, Ravi tries to help Major, who continues to believe he's going crazy. Oh, man.
Not a word about Lowell, which is understanding, because I'm not happy about them.
Okay, well, the fact that she's already investigating with Clive and Ravi and the whole thing, I'm going to think maybe it was a warning shot. I'm going to think Lowell's okay, because Liv, he just said, love you. They've just, you know, had this relationship. She's falling in love too. I'm going to say he's okay, that it was a warning shot.
Well,
because
I don't think she's
that cold-blooded to be that okay with it.
I would like to think that they wouldn't hire Arthur Pendragon just to kill him off.
Okay, on our Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale, let's go back to Patriot Brains. How would you rate the whole episode, not just the last few seconds?
I was tempted to give it a 0. I believe that's a sweet bell. Because no. Nope. 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 But I decided that the listeners deserve me at least trying to be objective. And therefore, the episode went all the way to tie and 8, because, well, it was pretty good and emotional, and the plot twist, oh my god, and everything. So, there. I'm being, you know, mature, even though I wasn't mature during the entire episode. But here it is, I'm being professional. Have your 8.
The last 5 seconds rate if there was a less than 0. But yeah, the previous
everything 50, up to
9
it,
minutes and 55 seconds.
Was, it deserves an 8.
Okay. I think I'm going to surprise you with my rating. Because I'm actually going to go, and you're going to have to look first on the scale to see where this is, to a D'Arble. Several reasons. I've been rating the episodes really high lately. 8s, 9s, and 10s.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm in a rut here with them. And that it's just going to become an 8, 9, 10 season. And I remember I started out with a 4. I rated it the first episode a 4 because I saw the potential. I loved this episode when I was watching it. I had my Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moments and just loving the revelations. And when it ended, I realized, and this might be because since our last episode, it has been renewed for a second season. And now I don't know where this is going to go for a second season, because it is piling so much on so fast. We talked about this early on, that Blaine went from being this nobody to suddenly having this whole mega business and creating all these zombies and the demand really fast. And her and Lowell are moving so fast. And I'm seeing that Clive is having important parts, but that the crime part, we have been consistently saying we didn't care about the crime. It hasn't really been since the Exterminator
Yeah.
episode, which is episode 3, that we've really cared about the crime as a major part of the story, because it involved Peyton and such. And I'm hoping that they weren't planning this as almost a self-contained series in this one season, kind of like what Awake ended up happening, where it had a beginning, middle, and end. Even though they wanted it to continue, they got canceled, so they had an ending. I don't know if they're having too much fun topping themselves and having fun mixing things in together and having a great time linking everything. And so I think, because I know it's got a season 2, and I don't know where they can go with this, and I don't want them to burn themselves out too fast, kind of like how I feel Marvel is doing with the Avengers. I feel they're burning themselves out way too much with so much still on the horizon, and I'm like, I don't even want to watch anymore, because it's just explosion and fight and explosion and fight and cool fight scenes and nothing else. I'm rating it at a Diablo, which is a 6. I'm dropping it way down. And I love the episode, but this one has me, I think, more concerned than ever, because, like I said, Clive, the crime isn't mattering that much anymore.
But you're not rating,
And
but with that approach, you're not rating the episode itself, you're rating the potential and the future, like we did with the pilot. So,
well, no, because it's like I'm seeing, I in the moment, yeah, I loved it. But as soon as it was over, I'm like, I'm gonna rate this, and I went 6. I mean, that was my natural gut reaction. And when I started trying to analyze why I'm rating it a 6, it's like, she's a crime-fighting zombie. She says it in this opening. There's not really a lot of crime fighting going on. It's not integrating as well. And I'm seeing loose ends, and I'm seeing too much coming on. I'm getting too much that I don't know. I can't say more than a 6, even though I love the episode, but
and you picked this episode to have a logical meltdown, this episode, when I'm in pain emotionally and I need somebody to take my side and rate it as highly as I did. I was being professional. And here you
am
are with
too. I
your
mean, I.
logic.
Well, but I said, okay, what would I rate this episode? And what came to me was 6. That was my gut feeling.
Heather, you know
Because
what
it's
you
just like,
do when you have a gut feeling like this? You lie.
I didn't say it was a bad episode. I said it was a great episode, but I'm gonna rate it a 6. Based on if they're falling into a rut, I think as well. And
God forbid we
I
got
yeah.
too good of
Yeah.
an episode, right?
Well, it's not that it, but I mean, it's like, God, okay, the whole, I love the scenes with like her and Lowell when he realizes that was a great scene. And I'm kind of looking back, okay, this is episode 8. Should we have been here this fast? Should I have learned this much so far? Should they be at the total I love you stage? Should Major be this falling apart? Should, Ravi be so quickly, oh yay, okay, I got bit by a rat. A zombie rat, but I'm okay. It yeah, that's why I'm sticking to it. I'm sticking to my 6,
No, it's
which
okay.
gives the next 5 episodes potential to still go back up.
But this is where I'm going through. They have only 5 episodes left. This season has 13 episodes. And if you're thinking they're going too fast with a 13 episode season, I'm not sure where it would leave the entire season. It would like we would be getting only half of the story if they
Yeah,
took a
it's.
pacing like you'd want it to.
I
So
mean, some of the. Well, I mean, I don't know. Just the way some of the things are being treated. I mean, like, it's when you stop and look at things. It's like if you really. If I stop and look at, say, Castle, which I've brought up several times. I love the show. I watch the show. It's one of the things when I got back from this vacation, I watched iZombie, because we're going to talk about it. And then I watched the season finale of Castle. Love it. But when I look at it as when it makes sense, I'm like, okay, well, this murder happens at such and such, and suddenly this mystery that has haunted him for the last 30 years he figures out in a day or two.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense. Or you see love stories where if you actually look at it, it's like, gee, they met 2 days ago and now they can't live without each other. And, you know, like Romeo and Juliet, that takes place over a couple of days, people.
Yeah.
That they go from not knowing each other to killing themselves over each other. It's that logical thing. It's that kind of step back. And when it's a play like Romeo and Juliet, okay, I'll be swept away in this one moment. But when it's something like Avengers, it's something that's pulled me out of a lot of the Avengers stuff and the Marvel stuff, is that I'm like, wow, we've gone from top of the world to Hydra's infiltrated everything to we're just totally contaminated to Winter Soldier is just boom, 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 and it's all this kind of stuff, and Ultron is this, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, it's too much. And it's kind of like I talked about with Walking Dead. I like when we have those step back episodes where we just have some of those quieter moments of learning. And I'm almost like, okay, I think we almost need that step back episode where things aren't constantly progressing. I love it. It makes for great reading. But at the end of it, I'm like, wow, that's the first book. Where can they go from there? Is it going to become ridiculous? Is this going to become humongous and out of control and not? Because now they're not just a one season. It's not an Awake. If you haven't seen Awake, it was an NBC series with Jason Isaacs. They found out they were canceled. They had an ending that made them just one complete season. Great. And I could see where this season could become just one complete novel in this season. But now it's not. And I'm like, suddenly I'm not as satisfied because I do want just that little bit of pullback every once in a while, that breather.
Here's a question then. If they weren't picked up for a second season, would you still rate it a 6?
I don't know. Because they were. And I saw the episode after. I mean, I still see those same holes of the crime. She's a crime-fighting zombie, but the crime isn't really taking a logical presence, a prominent presence in the story. And I almost think it would do better. Like, we did kind of some of those back and forth. If we had an episode where maybe the crime took a little bit more precedence for a while. Blaine wasn't advancing so much. I mean, we already have Blaine on his next rich person. At least one. You know, Jackie's gone.
Yeah.
Blaine's already on his next multi-gazillionaire. And moving up to that. I think that's one of the things that also did. I'm like, okay, so we're already going to killing a moonwalker because this rich guy didn't get his chance to go into space because he can't pass the physical thanks to Blaine. It was 7 episodes ago. Blaine was a know-nothing utopium drug dealer.
Yeah.
And I think it's things like that that made me start realizing I think it's advancing too quickly for its own good. It's still good, but I kind of want that fallback episode. Major is, and I'm really going into this one, Major is going, you know, falling faster and faster. He's lost his job. He's lost his woman. He's lost, you know, all this. He's lost his friends. He's losing his sanity and doesn't know what he's doing. La, 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 la. And I just started realizing, wow, this is, please tell me that this is now 7 months after she was infected, 8 months that we're not having a couple days or even a week in between episodes, that we've had a big time passage, something that I can at least think other things have been happening.
We'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing what you think about the episodes to come. Because that's been entertaining.
Mr. Berserk. Well, we'll see what we have because not next episode, that's Mr. Berserk, but episode 11 is called Astro Burger. And I have a feeling that's when we're now going to be dealing with our astronaut, and I'm not happy. Not happy about that one. That sudden Astro Burger at first I thought was going to be like some sort of retro 50s diner kind of thing at first.
Nope.
Yeah, now I know what that could be, and I'm not
Zombies
happy.
Going to the moon.
Yeah. And, well, we have those things, because, like, episode 12 is Dead Rat, Live Rat, Brown Rat, White Rat. Ravi and the Rats.
Yep.
Which is, you know, like a new pop group there. We see that coming back up and ending with Blaine's World. So there's the titles of the next few episodes. I don't know. I'm hoping that they leave themselves some wonderful rooms and don't paint themselves into a corner that they can't paint themselves out of, because I'm just seeing things that have me concerned. Enough where I've spent the last 10 minutes or so justifying my rating of 6. I tried to say 7. I honestly was trying to go, I promise you, I was trying to find a way, at least let me get up to seven. At least let me go cayenne. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Diyarbakır, Aleppo, six. That's the best I'm giving you on this one. And I still love the episode. Go
Hey,
figure. I'm a
you
blonde.
explaining
Makes
yourself
sense to
was
me.
highly entertaining. So, you know.
Well, thank you.
You're
We'll
welcome.
see if I'm. We'll see if I'm as entertaining next week when we talk about Mr. Berserk or when we talk about Orphan Black tomorrow. We won't say the title because those titles make absolutely no sense. They just sound so boring, and blah. Even though I find the description cool of why it is, but you know, Alex does. Here's also keeping our fingers crossed that nothing happens to Lowell. Otherwise, next week's episode will be a solo podcast. She will adamantly refuse to join me. If it hadn't been for Lowell being shirtless and almost bottomless, and Major and Robbie,
I
she
might
probably
go on
wouldn't have joined me
strike,
for this
so do
episode.
not be surprised if I do not show up in any iZombie podcasts ever again.
So thank you for joining us for this last dual podcast. Next week I will be doing a monologue about why I'm rating it a certain way. We will see you next week. Don't forget to go over to scififome.com and check out all the great articles and podcasts over there as well. Alex, thank you for begrudgingly joining me for this now extended podcast.
You're
And
welcome.
listeners, thank you, listeners, for sticking with it. And I'd like to know, what do you think of her rating and my rating and why we rated it? Make sure and let us know. You got to go all the way back to the beginning of the episode, though, to find out how. So, see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.